We began this Maimer list last week from the Sefer Alei Shur, from the Mashgiach Rav Albi, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. We started the first page of this remarkable Maimer that's called Das Atzmeinu, self-knowledge. Any hope that you and I have, which we all are filled with hope, to improve ourselves, to become greater people, greater Yidden, greater Jews. In order for that to happen, there has to be a basic level of self-knowledge to understand who I am, who we are. Otherwise, in a person's entire life could be spent in delusion, in a mistake, in a fantasy, trying to do a couple of mitzvahs, staying away from some avayers, and so on. The Mashgiach we learned last week was talking about what would the reaction of a person be? What would the reaction be to hearing a conversation between a person who loves you and a person who despises you? Listening into that conversation, how would you react? How would you react to hearing those true things being said about you that are not so positive, and the inability of the one who loves you to adequately defend all of your milas and all of your tzidkas? How would you react to that? How would you feel? The natural reaction, the feeling would be very hurt, first of all, very hurt that somebody would say something like that about you, very disappointed that your friend didn't successfully defend you. But the most important thing is that the reaction reveals that you've been trying to fool the entire world, and in doing so you've perhaps fooled yourself. When a person knows that that's who he is and those are his faults, he's not shocked, he's not surprised, but he's more determined to try to change his life and to improve his life. And this Maimer, the entire Maimer, we're not going to be able to finish it in one summer, but the entire Maimer is devoted to this subject of understanding in a general and basic way, understanding the different levels of the self. We're on the bottom of the first page, the last lines on the first page. Betchilas kol avayda atzmis oimedes ha-hakara atzmis. I mentioned this last week that we're always trying to get involved in good programs to improve Shmiras HaLashon and to improve our being parents, husband or wife, friends, our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the problem is that if all of those projects are undertaken without a basic knowledge of who you Bemis are, so then we find, as most of us have found in life, that we have these sudden spurts of greatness and these decisions that we make to really change, but they don't usually last that long because they're built upon a very weak foundation, because we're addressing or we're trying to cure something, we don't really know what the problem is inside of us. So therefore, b'tchilas kol avaydas atzmis, avayda atzmis, aymedis ha'akara atzmis. The beginning of any avayda, to improve ourselves, danob l'mokim ben l'am chaveru, the beginning of that is ha'akara atzmis, recognizing ourselves and knowing who we are. Mishle zachal amyaydai, a person who never ever was zaycheh for this, Shar HaVaida Pratis Sogur Bufanov, the gate of personal self-improvement and change is shut before you. Hu Yichya B'Shalva Is Chayva Ruchniyim, this person who has not entered into that world of self-awareness and knowledge can live his entire life B'Shalva in tranquility and peace, his spiritual life. Next page, Yikoshel Kashirabim Nechsholim, and he'll make the same kind of mistakes that many people make. One of the most common things that a person will say, regardless of what the Aveira was, if there are other people that you know that are also doing that Aveira, it's not so terrible. And if there are mitzvahs that you haven't done, that's okay as long as most of the people that you know have not done that mitzvah either. All of that is how the person will live his life. Kasher Abin Nechshalim. The same way many people make these mistakes, I'll also make these mistakes. Yasam Asam Toivim Kechol Adam Yisrael. You'll do a lot of nice things. All Jews do nice things, and you'll also do nice things. So there'll be some Averis, and there'll be some mitzvahs, and certainly Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekaper Schar Kol Birya. Hashem rewards a person for each and every good thing that he does, that she does. There isn't anything that we do, the slightest thought, good thought, a word, or a good action, that Hashem Yisbarach doesn't reward us for. Ben Aliyah, but to be a person who is a Ben Aliyah or a Bas Aliyah, greatness, to become somebody who could look back at the past 120 years and to say that my life was different, my life was special, that I fulfilled my tachlis in this world. A Ben Aliyah, V'ish Emes, and to be a truthful and real person, Lo Yiyah, you'll never be. Without Hakara Atzmis, so you could build a statue or you could build a little villa of Shmiras Olashim for 6 months. And for those 6 months, you're very good and you behave according to your calendar, your Chabad Chaim calendars and paraphernalia and tapes. And you'll be a good girl, a good boy for those 6 months. But a binyan, a building of a person who be'etz and doesn't want to say shlechta things, doesn't want to say bad things about another Jew, doesn't feel good about it, doesn't gain anything, not that it's a constant struggle. You know how many people, one of the easiest mashalim to use, especially when talking to Nashim Tzadkonius, is the issue of weight, right? Weight control, which some of you have thought about from time to time. So you know, a person can, almost every person can really lose a lot of, almost every, there are people that can't, but almost everybody, if they're desperate enough, like if there's a simcha coming up, and if they have to get into a certain dress or be someplace, a chvez, to make a certain impression, almost everybody can undergo a very brutal, thorough, loss weight program for a certain amount of time. And they could look good in those pictures and feel good about themselves and feel like, I never ever want to be different. This, I haven't felt this way in 20, 30 years, givaldi. And everybody, every time you walk into shul, all the other tzadkanyas give you that half approving, half jealous look. It's a machai. But the problem is not that sudden loss of weight, because almost everybody can do that, and almost everybody has done that. If they need to do it, they'll do it. But you know what the real problem is? How do you sustain that? How do you change your way of eating? To change one's way of eating, to change a person's way of thinking about food, thinking about living, how to change that way, and how to change in a very basic and fundamental way, that's so hard. Because you can hold back from Lashon Hara, you can go on Lashon Hara diet, you can go on all kinds of diets, whatever that, you know, you can, for Rosh Hashanah you can be on Yom Nirayim diet also. But by the time it gets to Nach Sukkis, just like it's already after Shever Brachas, already after, during Shever Brachas already, to hold on to that diet, the Yom Nirayim diet, the Yom Kippur diet, and to be able in the middle of Cheshvan and Tevis, in the middle of the winter, like I said last week, God forbid some tragedy happens and they give a big speech in the neighborhood about everybody should try to take upon themselves this inyan, and they say some inyan, and all the tzaddikim tzadkanias want to take upon themselves that inyan, they go on a big diet. Whatever that Rav said or whatever that Tzaddik said, and they go on a big diet. But you know, it's so hard to keep the pounds off over the years because there hasn't been a fundamental change in your way of thinking. You haven't really changed. So because of that, when the shock of that tragedy wears off, Chalila, or the shock and the fear of Yom Kippur wears off, or the desperate need, using the other Moshel, the desperate need to look good wears off, so then the most natural thing is to return to the old habits that are very much woven into the fabric of your life since the time that you're a kid. A way of thinking, a way of talking, a way of eating, a way of living. How do you change the etzem? So that's what this maimer is about. You can't unless you understand what's going on inside. You can't. It's impossible. There can only be temporary changes. But to really basically change oneself, that's what's missing in our lives. And you can't really do tshuva without that. Misha zocha l'hakaras atzmo, the third line. A person who really came to understand, this is who I am. Mukhrach al yod lova li de avayda puria. A person who comes to what we're going to be learning, which is hakara atzmo, self-knowledge. That person must come from that. If it's a sincere and honest person, and you stare at yourself in the mirror and you see something for the first time in your life, you're not hiding, you're not blaming it on your parents, you're not blaming it on your teachers, you're not blaming it on your kids, you're not blaming it on your pets, you're not blaming it on anybody, and for the first time in your life you're able to look in the mirror to say, this is taka ugly, there's something basically wrong with me, I've been hiding from this my entire life. A sincere and honest person, who all of us consider ourselves to be honest and sincere, must come to some real changes in life as a result of that. Deep changes, not shallow, superficial changes, a little bit on the surface, but something which be'emes is deep and real. Ban hug of amidas. I've seen over the years, I've seen so often by Balei Tshuva, such kaiches. Because remember, if you have a person who is able to change his or her life after all the years, is able to turn one's life completely around, Shabbos and Kashrus and many other things, is able to change one's life, that's a person who has tremendous kaiches. A person who has tremendous strength. Most of us who were raised, Baruch Hashem, in nice religious homes, we were set on certain course, and things were okay, pretty much, all the years. With the mitzvahs, to stay away from big avers, and to try to do nice mitzvahs, and so on, and occasional lapses here and there. But for the most part, we're good boys and girls. We're not used to making dramatic changes in life. We're not used to it. We're not used to any great internal upheaval. External upheavals, it's not up to us. What happens to us, health, panasa, but inside of ourselves, mostly we're not used to great changes. A Baal Tshuva is able to stop smoking also. Because a Baal Tshuva has stopped 1,000 other things in life. And stopping another habit is part of the avoda of that heroic person that we all admire that's called a Baal Tshuva. But most of us, let's face it, are not heroic. Most of us function at an even keel through life, and we dive in that there shouldn't be any great challenges, because we're not quite sure what we would do, chas v'shalom. But to make a great change in life, for that to happen, that's what he's talking about. That's what we're going to learn about. Shinuyim ma'amikim, a real change in life. For that, you have to come to a place of hakara atzmus, of knowing. Really, of knowing what's going on inside. Banhoga v'midas. You have by a lot of the Balei Tshuva, not by all, but by a lot of the Balei Tshuva, they had no hang-ups. They weren't worried about shiduchim in this thing. They had no hang-ups going to therapists. You have people that are going to therapists for 20, 30 years. That means for 20, 30 years they've been in this sugi of trying to figure themselves out. Now they might be getting a lot of bad information depending on who the therapist is, right? And it could be that they're being taken for a ride and they're being misled. But one thing is clear, the sugya of who they are, they're working on for 20, 30 years. They're working on the sugya of who am I? What are my relationships lacking? What are they missing? Most of us are not Isaac in that. Whether we need to be more or not, that's not the point. The point is according to the Torah. If you're not an individual who's able to enter into that self, then it's very unlikely that there are going to be any great changes taking place. Just hope that things remain calm and quiet and you make it to the end zone without too many problems. But that's not the tachlis of our being in the world. Shinuyim Amikim Ba'anhog and how we live Ubamidis and Amidis. Haprokim Aboim Ne'adim L'tiyuram. The coming chapters are going to be describing exactly what is the basic composition of each and every Jew. What are we composed of? The Marechas HaKora Leitis Bara Havoida HaPratis Atzma. The Mizgiach says, obviously, I can't sit down with each and every person privately and go through that individual's variables as far as all of these midas are concerned. I can't sit with each person separately. But Megumaseinu Kan, my Tachlis here, the Mizgiach says, is Levara HaKoiches V'Shichveis HaNefesh. To at least explain it, to clarify the different koiches and the layers of the soul that each and every Jew has, different layers. Shichvos hanefesh, harkovas hamaisen. What does that mean, harkovas hamaisen? Harkovas hamaisen literally means the different ingredients that every act that we do is composed of, is made of. Lamosh, I'll give you an example. Now it's the time of Ben HaMetzorim, so we're familiar with the sugya of the sin of the spies of the Meraglim, right? Because everybody knows the Gemara says that because they came back with that report, and we cried, Abichia Shochimim, we cried for no reason, we're still crying, and Tisha B'Av is the continuation of those tears. So the Zohar Kodesh says, what happened with the spies, what happened with the Meraglim? These were great people. These are great and exalted people beyond anything that we could ever imagine, but higher than any tzaddik we've ever heard of. These were the leaders of the Shvatim. These are the greatest tzaddikim in the world. So the Zohar Kodesh says an amazing thing. The Zohar Kodesh says that everything that they did and everything they said was 1,000% in their minds, was 1,000% l'shem shamayim. Was for the sake of heaven. And they felt that they were doing the greatest favor for the Jewish people, the greatest tzidkus. What was the tzidkus? The Meraglim, when they went to Eretz Yisrael, they saw that in Eretz Yisrael, that there was going to be a different hanhoget. In Eretz Yisrael, there were no longer going to be miracles. We were no longer going to have Hashem's cloud surrounding us in a pillar of fire. We were no longer going to eat from Hashem's hand from the food that He was going to give us. And the Meraglim therefore were frightened, what's going to be with regular people, what's going to be with Amchi Yisrael? They're going to get lost in the streets of Tel Aviv and Eilat and Haifa. They're going to forget the Rabbein Shloimeh. They're going to get lost, eventually they're going to get lost in Golis and all different kinds of places. Here in the Midbar, it's Gevaldik, because here in the Midbar, in the desert, they see you, Rabbein Shloimeh, they hear you, they feel you, they have Moshe Rabbeinu, they have that closeness, that they feel that they're in your embrace, because it's a place of miracles, of Nisan. But if they come to Eretz Yisrael is a place of Teva, of nature. It's a place of Hestaponim, of Hashem's light being hidden. It's where Hashem's Baruch is telling Jews that they should build homes and to have vineyards and fields. No more food falling from heaven, and no more Kriyas Yamsuvs. From now on, it's going to be a regular life, and you're going to have to believe in God who's hidden in nature. So the Meraglim believed that they were doing the biggest taiva. The Meraglim saw themselves coming; they saw themselves as tzaddikim. And when they came back, you think they came back feeling that they were sinners? They came back with a talus over their heads, wearing their tefillin, and they came back and they said what they saw. And they felt that the Rebbe Shalom loves them, and the Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be so proud of them. Could you imagine how shocked they were? The Zohar says they were so shocked when Yeshua and Kalev got up, and the Rebbe Shalom said, "Now you're all going to die, and you brought sorrows upon Klai Yisrael for who knows how many years." So the Zohar Kodesh says that what they described was true. Eretz Yisrael is a difficult place, still a hard place to live. There's a reason why most of us are not there, and it's not just to take care of our parents. It's a hard place to live. Eretz Yisrael is very hard. And when they described, they did not exaggerate, they said things that were true. And they were also right that in the desert it's easier to feel a relationship with Hashem Yisburg in the desert. That's also true. So what was missing? So here the Mashgiach says, Hakavas HaMaisa means everything that a person does has levels and layers. The Zohar HaKadosh stripped away all the outer layers of the Meraglim and said that really on the deepest level, you know what they were worried about? The Zohar says they're worried about losing their jobs. That's what the Zohar says. They were worried about losing their jobs. Because they knew, without going into any pratim here, they knew that in Eretz Yisrael they were no longer going to be the Nesiim, the princes of the tribes, for reasons that the Zohar goes into, it's not important for now. They knew that they were going to be losing their jobs. They were Bamidbar people. And they were leaders in the Midbar. They were leaders in the Midbar. And they knew that they were going to be losing that position of being Nesiim. Now, if you, I would have said to them, we know what you're thinking about. Don't come with any fancy drushes about saving Klal Yisrael, and you're worried about Yidden, and you love the Rebbeinu Shlom so much you want his children to be good. If you and I would have said to the Nesiim, it's not true. You're just like the rest of us. You're worried about saving your own skins. You're worried about your jobs. That's what you're worried about. The Meraglim would have screamed and yelled and cried and said, you're liars, you don't know what you're talking about, it's not true. But the Rebbeinu Shlom said, that's the truth. That's in other words, underneath all the tzidkis, underneath all of those levels of tzidkis, there was a simple worry, an understandable, reasonable worry of losing your kavod, losing your greatness, losing your position of authority. Zehu. Everything else was built upon that underlying nakuda. Therefore, the entire building was a lie. And all the good things that they were saying, even though they were true, but they were coming from a place that's not true. Because every maisa consists of different levels. See, even when you're doing a nice thing, which the Baruch Shalom gives reward, even if you do it with whatever intention, we should all do nice things. But you could be doing the nicest thing in the world. But what does that maisa consist of? What's it made of? What's underneath it? What's underneath it? To be able to come to the truth of what's inside my thoughts, what's inside my words, what's inside my actions. That's the avodah of these chapters. That's what he means by hakavas hamaisim. What are my actions composed of? What's underneath my actions? Same thing with Korach. All of these stories that we just are going through now in Sefer Bamidbar, Korach wasn't a big tzaddik. Korach was a bigger tzaddik we can ever be masik. Korach was tzaddik yisar d'arli. In the end, Korach will be restored to a position of greatness. But the Ari HaKadosh says, Korach is tzaddik atoma yifrach. The last letters, tzaddik, kuf, katoma reish, yifrach, ches is Korach. The Rebbe Abshmalki from Nicholsburg used to, when he would talk, he would say the Heilige Zeydik Korach. He was a Levi. The Rebbe Abshmalki would say the Heilige Zeydik Korach. Korach was a holy person. He was a great person. When we meet him in the Chumash, or you see like in the kids' coloring books, they make him look like a bad guy, you know? Korach was sitting with white socks and white bekesher and a white strimal. Korach was a big tzaddik. And Korach was saying good things. Ki kol ha'edo kulam kedoshim v'soichem Hashem. All Yidden are holy. U'besoichem Hashem, they don't need to have Kahanim and Levim. They don't need to have a Moshe and an Aaron. Everything he Korach said was true. But the Baruch Shem was Megala, and Moshe and his Megala revealed that underneath it was also a personal cheshvan. It wasn't a tzidkis. And in his Madrega, that was a big, big mistake. It was a big nefila. So each and every one of us, to be able to come to understand the hakavas hamaisim, to be honest about where something comes from inside of us, that's an avodah of a lifetime. But as we're going to learn, it brings a tremendous joy, tremendous simcha. As much as it hurts to find out certain things, the simcha is immeasurable. And that's what he explains now. In the next paragraph, Hayidia Atzma al Atzmeinu Miroi Memes. Just being introduced to yourself, as much as something's hurt, it's Miroi Memes, which means it's inspiring, it's exciting. Before we know ourselves, we're living in a pit. Now that pit might be in a beautiful mansion someplace, whether it's in the Five Towns, Flatbush, Muncie, or Monroe. You might be living in some beautiful mansion, in some big house. But as long as you're living a life of self-deception, you're living be'emes in the tahaim, you're living in a deep hole, in the abyss. When a person begins to know who he really is, even though it hurts to find out, you know, a person who goes through therapy, and the couples, I just was talking to a couple a few weeks ago, and they told me that each week when they come to the therapist, they start right away to get into an argument, because if someone starts and the other one has tiredness about what you're saying, it's not true. So they said the therapist always says you have 15 minutes to fight and then we'll try to talk about the truth. You have 15 minutes to argue that it's your fault, and then we'll talk about the truth. And the couple told me that every time they come in, he has to stop them. Of course, 50, they can go like that, they've been going like that every day for 15 years, and they will continue. But then they stop because he stops them. Then they start to talk about the Hakovitz HaMaisim, what's underneath all of this. And what they're feeling at the same time is their horrible embarrassment and shame of discovering the truth. But the feeling when they leave is such a feeling of exaltation and of joy. Just like cleaning up the chametz, I'm sure there's some of you that still do that here, right? In my neighborhood, there's only a minion of ladies that still are doing that. I'm sure some of you are still clean for Pesach. It's the hardest thing in the world to do a good job for Pesach. But it's geschmacki afterwards. It feels good afterwards. Halach has kama v'kama. The greatest joy of the year is Motzi Yom Kippur. Not just because you have something to eat after Yom Kippur. If that's your simcha, then you're still living in the hole. But if somehow, over the course of Yom Kippur, you were able to say an honest Hashem Lebagadnu, you were able to look at the Baruch Hashem in the eyes for the first time in the whole year and to say, Atat Tzadik, Akola Bo Aleinu, the Baruch Shalom, you're the Tzadik and I'm not. After a whole year, you said something that was finally true. You said one good Shema Yisrael by Ne'ilah, the whole year Shema Yisrael to be Yitzhak. And now finally you said a good Shema Yisrael. So everybody knows Yom Kippur is a hard day. And the whole time of the year, it's a hard time of the year. A hard time of the year. But like the Rebbe Itzchol Vork used to say, you see how Yidden, when they sing Hashabnu, who else in the world does this thing? Hashabnu, Bogadnu, what are you so happy about? We're traitors, we're thieves, we're liars, what are you singing? So Rebbe Itzchol Vork asked, what are you singing, Davidui? So he said, Rebbein Shalom, if you wouldn't have given us such a day, we would continue to live with the lie of all the disgusting things the mess that we've made in your palace. But you gave us Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur you taught us how to clean up the mess that we've made. And you've taught us how to admit and to see the truth. And you gave us a broom, and you gave us a mop to clean. And therefore we're singing to you, Ayashanu, Bogadnu. The Baal Shem HaKadosh said that if not for Yom Kippur, where would we have taken such a beautiful niggun for Vidui? The most beautiful nusach of the whole year is Yom Kippur. And they're saying the same thing. It hurts Yom Kippur. Tisha B'Av also hurts. But Tisha B'Av is also, as you know, a yontiv. It's a yontiv. It's a yontiv that the Rebbe should take away. But it's a yontiv, and that's why it's called in the Megillah a mo'ed. Kirulai mo'ed. It's called a mo'ed because It's a day that I meet up with Hashem in an honest way through the tzaros of Klai Yisrael. Because there are very few things in the world that shake us up except for tzaros. It's not like people are going to run together to have a tilim gathering because they want to thank God, you understand? You don't see too many tilim gatherings like that. To thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To thank Him for our children. To thank Him for our food. To thank Him for our homes. But unfortunately, there are plenty of tilim gatherings when it comes to things that are not good. So Tisha B'Av is a day that's not good. But at least the Baruch Hashem hears sincere words coming from Jews, because Tzaros we are upset about. Yiddish Tzaras hurt us, even if it's not our own, personally. Suffering of Jews hurts us, it touches us. And it bothers us. So for the Baruch Hu to have from us a sincere word, I have to hold myself back every week when I walk out, because I daven early and then I give a shiur, and when I leave it's the second minyan. I have to stop myself, hold myself back to talk to some of the young fellows that are outside. I want to say, Yankele, it's Parshas Pinchas. Pinchas is such a gewaltig parsha, as all the Yom Tovim, it's not going to be till next year Parshas Pinchas. Why don't you come inside and listen to Parshas Pinchas? But you don't have to go tell anybody that when it comes to Ne'ilah, right? You don't have to tell about Ne'ilah. And you wouldn't have to tell any of those guys if, God forbid, one of their friends lost a kid and he had to be by the Levaya, or he had to go for a Shiva. You wouldn't have to call him in to come out in for the Shiva. He'd be in the Shiva sitting right next to his friend. So Tisha B'Av is the day the Baruch Hu shakes us up with the Yiddish Tzaras. What's the Yontav of Tisha B'Av? The Yontav of Tisha B'Av is that at least a Jew is saying something that's real. At least he's in a real place. And there's nothing that the Baruch Hu delights in more than seeing a Jew who's honest and real. It's much better when it comes in a good way, not in a bad way. But even when it comes, even when it comes in a way that's not so good, Chazal say on the pasuk in Shir Shim, everybody knows the pasuk, it's a famous song. Hashmini is kailach, right? Ki kailach arev umarech nava. Hashmini is kailach. The Muslim says, I want to hear your voice. So Chazal say, Muslim adav adayma. To what this, can this be compared? So Yisroel says, a muscle. I'm sure you're familiar with this. Says there was a princess, a Bas Melech, that fell into a deep pit. And somebody came along, a guy came along and rescued her from the pit. And she was calling out from the pit, Hatzileini, Hatzileini, save me, Ratana, save me, rescue me. And this prince in shining armor, you know, rescues this white in shining armor, rescues the princess. And of course they're going to get married, they fall in love, they're going to get married. So Chazal saying that in the course of the engagement, the prince to be, whatever, the chassan, doesn't see his kala speaking in with such warm, passionate words the way that she first called out, save me, help me, rescue me. So what does he do? So he hires some guys, he pays some hoodlums, some listims, some thugs, that when the princess is coming from the royal, walking around the royal garden, someplace by the garden, to go and to scare her, to shake her up. So the, but not to, not chasson to hurt her, just to scare her. So the guys go, they go, and they attack her, they don't touch her, and she screams out again, Hatzileini, Hatzileini, my beloved, and he comes there and he says, Hashmini is Karla. Harini is Marech. The Baruch Hu says, when I took you out of Mitzrayim, you screamed when you were standing by the ocean, you were screaming out, you were crying out, what's going to be, what's going to be. And I took you through the Yamsuf, and I took you out of Mitzrayim. But the same way that during the engagement, the Kala got lost in her thoughts about her gown and the color of the tablecloth and all the other plans, and she forgot what it meant, she forgot what it means to talk to the Chassan sincere words. So sometimes the Baruch Hu feels with us the same way. That a person simply is not talking in a real way, not living in a real way. And he shakes us back into that place that's real. Thank God we're living in a time where we're not tested. For the most part, I mean many people are, Hashem Yirachem, but we're not tested the way that our parents and grandparents lived day in, day out with difficulties. Which our children, to a large extent, Baruch Hashem, are spared those difficulties. But they're also, unfortunately, what they're also being kept from is this self-awareness that comes with going through difficulties in life. Which we don't want anybody to go through difficulties, Chalila. But how do you raise a great person? How do you raise a great person when the greatest difficulty that the person had was the lipstick wearing off too soon? or missing a flight, which anyway the parents pay for a second time, or what other disappointments, it should never be chalil anything bad. But our parents and grandparents look at it as a galachta, these things. They have a hard time relating to these sorrows of not being able to find the right station, or not being able to get your song, or that you went to the concert and it was already full, and how am I going to go on with life? How am I going to go on with life? I think I might have told you last year, but it stays in my head. I'm sorry for repeating. It stays in my head that I had. I'm not making fun of chalila, because anything that a person feels, it hurts you in that place where you are and who you are. But a couple of years ago, there was a girl who called. I don't know who she was, and she was crying and crying. I said, "What happened?" She told me that her grandfather passed away. And I asked her, it happened a few days ago. And how old is the grandfather? She told me the grandfather was 93 or 94. So I said, "Well, you had an arichas yomim. He had an arichas yomim in 93, 94. You were so zeichet to have." The same thing you would say to her, right? "You're zeichet to have a zeid like that. I never had a zeid in my life. You're zeichet to have a zeid in 93, 94. But this is what she says to me. She says to me, "I'm telling you the truth." She said, "I can't daven if Hashem did that to me." She said, "I can't go on davening if Hashem took away my zeid." I don't know what to say. So what? I mean, I know we say b'shun and swansik, but no, it's not so often that it happens. B'shun and swansik, we say b'shun and swansik. It's not so often. What were you thinking? You had your zeid till 93. He's 93 years old. You can't doubt it. Tell me you're hurt. Tell me you're in pain. Tell me you love your grandfather. You miss him. That's all good. But you can't daven? Means the Rebbeinu Shalom is not a Rebbeinu Shalom anymore? You were able to daven because 6 million Jews died. That's you're able to daven. Men, women, and children, you're able to daven. But your 93-year-old Zayde passed away and you can't daven? But we're living in such a weak generation, you understand? We're so fragile. We're so fragile. We're so weak. And one of the most... And one of the problems with that is that we're not tested to find out the fabric of what we're made from. We don't get to the bottom of ourselves because we don't go through Tisha B'Av, thank God. Like our parents and grandparents went through a lot of Tisha B'Av. And we don't go through those. I mean, when I say we, there are people now who go through their Tisha B'Av, obviously. But b'chlal, not the way that it was, b'chlal. So therefore you can go your whole life never ever getting to that part of who you are, because you never were forced into that place. On Yom Kippur, there's a simcha of tasting a little bit of the self. On Tisha B'Av, even lo aleinu, when people sit through a shiva, Hashem Yirachem, and they have to work through the sugi of losing someone that they love, but they find inside of themselves a part of emunah that they didn't know that they had. They have to reach deep inside themselves. And therefore the Mashgiach says, Hayidia atzma alatzmin miroi memes. Even though it hurts, but knowing yourself and getting to the bottom of yourself, at the same time that it hurts, it inspires. It's exciting. Before that, we're in a pit. Even if you haven't yet changed your life, but by knowing who you are, you're not in the hole anymore. You're outside the hole. You're looking in. You're looking at it, and it's not so pretty. You see stuff that's not so good. But the same way with the therapist. You're seeing stuff that's not so good. But at least for the first time in your life, you're not lying. You're not making believe. You're not faking. It's real. And if it's real, it means it can be fixed. If it's real, it means it can be changed. It's real. Being aware, understanding, and recognizing the truth, that itself lifts you up from the pit. A person who doesn't recognize himself, doesn't know himself, he identifies with all of his narishkeit. It's one thing if you laugh at your narishkeit. We all have narishkeit. And if you laugh at your narishkeit, it means that you know that it's narishkeit. But what happens if you take it seriously? What happens if you're taking your narishkeit seriously? If you've ever detected that in a friend, Mistami, you have it too. We're taking our Narishkeit seriously. You begin to identify with the Narishkeit. In other words, it's one thing to make a big deal about something, but it's another thing, if it doesn't work out, to be able to laugh and to say, it's Narishkeit. I heard from Reb Tzvi Meir, from Yerushalayim, I told this to you a couple of years ago, I think a few years ago I told this to you, that there was a mice in Yerushalayim where the family came for the wedding. They came to the hall over there, and the guy that booked the caterer made a mistake, and he gave two families for two chasnas at the same time. So that means that the second party came, and they found the other caller making the hair and the makeup and everybody getting ready, and the caterer said, whoops, I double booked. So what happened? So Tzimaya said, fireworks, ain l'shav, ain l'taya. He said, the father of the second family, the father said, what are we going to share this girl's, no, it's nobody's fault, it's the caterer, but it's not the caller's fault. Are we going to share their simcha? We're not going to share their simcha. We're not going to share their simcha. And we're going to go, and we'll find tonight what it is down the road. We'll go down the street by this yeshiva, that yeshiva, a kitzur. Reb Tzvi Meir said that they people came. They told everybody this one. We had to get food here. The caterer from this place also sent over, and everybody got food over to the other place, to the yeshiva, and they made it in the yeshiva, and they had a chuppah shatav muslach. Reb Tzvi Meir said that he met the couple, the second couple. He met them with a stroller going down the street a year or something later. And he says, is there a nafkin between this baby and that baby? Is there a nafkin between this girl? He says, there is a nafkin in it. He says, because that baby from the second couple is shining with the light of being mavir al hamidas. Shining with the light of what? Of his gabus. Of not staring at somebody else's simcha because of your disappointment. And in the end, isn't it all an Narishkeit? It's all Narishkeit. It's all Narishkeit, Sheba Narishkeit. Because everybody knows that, as I was talking about this a little bit the other day, I know people don't like my talk about it, but it's a Narishkeit. It's not Nafkimina. The only thing that you have after this chasna, that chasna, is whether the heart burns for another 2 hours or less, or more. There's no Nafkimina. Now this, in the Olam HaEmes, it's Narishkeit. But what do they have that's forever? But Tzimia says, forever they have the simcha of doing the right thing. When a person's at least able to look at this, at the Narishkeit, and decide, I like it, but sof kol sof, I'm not going to do something that's wrong. And they're able to live, and they're able to mezgarba in that moment. You can only do that if you're in a place where you really know the truth. So he says, therefore self-knowledge, although it might hurt, but it also brings you tremendous joy. Because you're freed from the silliness. You're freed from the smallness. You don't get crazy by everything that happens in your life. You don't get turned upside down because of a disappointment, that it didn't work out the way that you wanted. It had to be this way, pink like this, or pink like that. It didn't work out that way. And if it didn't work out, so it didn't work out. You're freed from that. But if you don't come to that place of akratzmus, is you identify with the Narishkeit. You actually see yourself as being that person. Not I'm a much greater person that I'm a little disappointed and I could laugh at it and try to get over it. But your mamash take it seriously. You take it seriously. And you'll carry on like a campaign because of something that's nothing, not here or there. A campaign, and talk to people and get upset and make a whole tumult about something that's nothing. That's the Mahakara. But if you come to recognize that this is a chisorin in me, that I'm getting caught up in some kaptus and some narishkeit, that's the Mahakara, my freedom between Elav and Negiah Seinu. That already separates between yourself and that Negiah. So you're able to look at it and to say, it's a problem. I have to work on it. I understand it's not good. I have to work on it. But you don't identify with it and say, that's me. You hurt my feelings. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. No, you insulted me. I didn't mean to insult you. That there are brothers and sisters that are not talking to each other for 20 years. Because of what? What? If you go back to it, it's because of what? There are people I know that they went through concentration camp, brothers and sisters, and they don't talk to each other. That they were together in the milchama, and they can't talk to each other for the 40 years afterwards because of what? Of what? So the person's at least able to say it's a narishkeit, and of course I have to try to overcome this and to forgive you. But if you don't do that, then you actually believe in your narishkeit. You identify with it. Now, once you understand what is it that's really upsetting me, what's inside, like we learned about the Meraglim, about Kerech, what's really going on inside. Once you see the truth, even though you haven't yet come to a level where you're able to completely correct and repair that, nevertheless, you still have to struggle with it, it's a war. But you still feel the ani, the eye of who you are. And the eye of who you are is able to look at that and to say, stop crying, stop complaining, it's okay, work on it. You can handle this, you can manage this. You don't get stuck in that place. Or Hashem's. The Mashgiach says that many years ago in Germany, they found in a certain cellar, a dungeon somewhere, that there's this true thing. They found a guy, whatever, how it happened that his parents left him there when he was a baby, a little kid, and he had food in that place, and he was never outside the cellar. He grew up in that place, in the cellar. He never saw the sunlight. Shema Olam Lo Yirah Or Hashem's. He never saw the sunlight. Loira Adam, he never met a person. He never left the cellar. Kasha Lomad Ladaber, when he was taught how to speak, Nizbara Kimialdusai Huksak Bibididus Gemura Baisamate, the people found out when they were able to communicate with him that he was completely alone all of his life. He lived alone in that cellar. Adam Ze, this person, Kasha Nerchach Ladas, he called Shnoisav Bilabamate, once he understood. Once he understood that that's not the whole world. Once he understood the Rachmanis, you spent your whole life, you spent 30 years in a dungeon. And they told him there's a place called Italy, there's a place called France, there's a place called America. There are trees, there are mountains, there are lakes, there are rivers, there are people, there are children, there are flowers, there are Christ. Once they told him that, he realized, he understood that all of his life was spent in a miserable dungeon. Even before he took the trip to Italy or France, even before he met more people and he went to other places, he's already outside of he's far away from the dungeon. As long as you think that's your whole life, then you're stuck in a dungeon. You're stuck in a dungeon. Yet people whose whole life can be revolving around the smallest things in the world. Narishkeit. Small, and when I say narishkeit, it can be choshev and narishkeit. We'll talk about it more in the first parak. Choshev and narishkeit. The ladies in my shul got very, some of the ladies, not a few of them, but got upset with me. A couple of ladies, when I was talking on the Shabbos a few weeks ago about how you have some people, so you also get upset. How you have some people get upset. You have some people that they have nothing in their lives except their children. Nothing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be absolutely devoted to our children. It shouldn't be the point of our hearts. Our children that Hashem blessed us with. But you have people that they never ever have themselves. I'm not talking about selfish. I'm not talking about go take a vacation. I'm not talking about go take a robot instead of taking care of your grandchildren. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you can't talk to them about any other subject because there is no other subject in their lives. There's no other subject. It's just their children. What about your davening? What about your midas? What about your avaydas? Your avayd hapnimis? Do you think the tachlis of your life that you're put into this world, you think you've come to that tachlis? Have you come to that tachlis? Do you think about why you were created? Are you living for your tachlis? The reason the Baruch Hashem gave you children is part of your tachlis, to raise holy Jewish children. and to care for them and to think about them and to worry about them. And if any of you thinks that I'm saying something that's not like that, then I beg you, mechila, you're making a big mistake. That's not what I'm saying. The same way I said to the chevra in shul, that's not what I'm saying. I'm old-fashioned, the same way everybody else here is old-fashioned. But that's not the tachlis. That's not the tachlis of your life. To spend your whole life going to babies. It's not the tachlis. It's not the tachlis. And if you think that's the tachlis, you're making a mistake, not for men and not for women. It's not the tachlis. And no great person ever believed that was the tachlis. Part of the tachlis is adoring children and raising children. That's part of the tachlis. That's part of your avoider. And that has to be also with an avoider to serve their Ribbono Shel Olam. But when you get a person that has nothing in her life or his life, except when they think that, with this, that anybody who meets them, all they want to hear about it is 15, 20 minutes of schmooze about your children or grandchildren. And that's, and akedei kach, you would forget the tachlis of your life to think that that person's tachlis is also your children. Not even their children. Maybe it would be their children. No, your children. As if someone wants to hear, everybody wants to hear for a minute or two, but no one wants to hear a drosha for half hour about your children or grandchildren, unless it's your family. Right? And even then, a half hour is too much. But ad kidei kach, could a person be living in a dungeon? But it's a nice dungeon. It's a dungeon with children. It's a dungeon with children, but it's a few blocks in Flatbush, a few blocks in Far Rockaway or Muncie, or a few blocks in Yerushalayim or in Bnei Brak. A couple of blocks with a couple of stores, a couple of kids. And thus is thus. It's a nice dungeon. And if this person that they found in Germany, maybe he was living in the dungeon of the Hilton or something. But it's still a dungeon because he thought that's the whole life is there. There's nothing else in life. That's all there is in life. He has nothing else in his life. Knowing that there's a big world outside of my dungeon, that itself is already exhilarating. Even if you haven't gotten to those places yet, it's exciting. As long as the guy lived in the dungeon, he had no way of knowing that his whole life is a miserable, small life. He had no way of knowing that. Any of you remember, you'll forgive me, I don't know if any of you ever watched television before, but when I was younger I did, and there was a show called Beverly Hillbillies, you remember? Okay, so some of you remember, there's a show called The Beverly Hillbillies, and you might remember, because these are the things we usually don't forget, you can't remember yesterday's parasha, but you can remember The Beverly Hillbillies. That's how it is in life. So you might remember that They discovered oil, right? They lived like in a miserable, miserable shack in Appalachian someplace, but they lived in the worst place, and they found oil. So they came from the banks, whatever, from California. They heard that this guy Clampett became a big gevir, right? So they're all coming to the gevir. So I remember that the first episode was that the guy from the bank comes with his assistant, and he comes with his suit and everything. He comes to this hick, Jed Clampett, with a mishpacha, right? And Jed is standing there, and the guy from the bank says, "Mr. Clampett, look at what you live in." Because it was a shack. "Look at what you live in. You have to get water. What do? You have to go to the pump down the hill. And you have over here the floor, that the floor is made from earth, from smooth down earth." Like he's going over 10 things, you know, in the misery of his life. So Jed Clampett says, "You know, you're right. I'd be crazy to give all of this up." "You're absolutely right. I got to be out of my mind to give all of this up." It's a big musr. Because what the musr is, you shaita, you're living in this life. And for you, so we came to talk to you that there's something big, there's something beautiful. And to you, we said, "You're right, I got to be crazy. It took me 40 years till I got a pump. Until then, I used to go down to the river with a bucket. Now I have a pump. This is progress, right? This is progress." Like our kids look at us and say, "Rachmanis, when we hold the cell phones, right? Because we don't know what to do with them." So we're so proud of ourselves that we can finally dial the number right. And the children can like fly to the moon with their cell phones, and we're just trying to dial the number. It's Rachmanis on us. until you really know all the things and you read, who read the Bichl from the cell phone, the whole Bichl, to know what it says over there? So they came to Jed Klimper, and then they said to Jed Klimper, and he says, Jed Klimper says, you're right, I shouldn't give all this up. If you would say, if you go to the guy in the dungeon and you'd say, look what you have here in the dungeon, you have another 30 years of tuna fish, cans of tuna fish. Look at the other side of the wall. You got another 40 years of salamis. The guy never had in his life a decent meal. But this is all he had. And you tell him, what else do you have here in this dungeon? You have here a pillow and a mattress. That's a Gan Eden. To him, that's all he knows. That's a Gan Eden. If you think that we live any differently than that, if you never learned Tanya, if you never learned Sfas Emes, if you never learned Michtav Meliyo from beginning to end, inside from beginning to end, you don't think it's the same thing? It's a million times more than that. Who could say what it means? What, from the Baditshva, Kedushas Levi in the Parasha. Did you see the Kedushas Levi last Shabbos? That means we're still in the dungeon. Because a person who's in that dungeon thinks that everything must be here. Look what I have over here. What else could I possibly have? And that's the biggest rachmanis. But if you discover, as we're going to learn in the Maimer, if you discover the different parts of the depths of who you are, the mamakim of the nefesh, the 10 levels of depth in a Jew, if you find the mamakim, even though there are things that you discover, wow, I didn't know that. But the knowledge itself means you're far away from the dungeon. It means you're already higher than the dungeon. Because when you learn that piece in the Kedushas Levi, you're not holding by what the B'ditchev is saying, but it's so exciting to hear there's such a world. It's so exciting to hear such a thing, that there exists such a world that the B'ditchev lived in. Because that's also our world. Alright, we're not in that Madrega, but it's such a beautiful world. And we could hear about it and read about it, and we want to go there. My father, Zalgazozai, told me that when he was back at home growing up, he remembers there was a Yid that came, there was a Yid that came from Eretz Yisrael. There was a rich Jew from town, the only one they ever heard of, from that place, that went to Eretz Yisrael. And when he came back from Eretz Yisrael, the whole city, all the Jews of the city, came to the big shul, the men came to the big shul, and the Rav came, and the Rav put on his shrimal. It was during the week. And the Yid came back with some Paris from Eretz Yisrael. And he remembered that the Rav cut up, they had some Paris from Eretz Yisrael, and the Rav was cutting them into tiny, little, tiny pieces. And my father remembers how the people there were crying, Eretz Yisrael Dikah Paris. And everybody was crying and screaming and fighting to get a taste of an Eretz Yisrael Dikah Paris. What it meant, a she'ifa for Eretz Yisrael, which nowadays if someone said, I think I'll go, you want to come with me? I'm going for the weekend. You want to come? I have a bar mitzvah of a third cousin once removed. You want to come? Come to Eretz Yisrael. I mean, I'm exaggerating. But the hasagis of a person, the she'ifas of a person are entirely different. So he says, So my father said, we didn't know. We used to dream of Eretz Yisrael. And you know something, the dream is always, not always, a lot of times the dream is sweeter than when you actually see something. My father said, the dream of Eretz Yisrael, what it was to us, growing up. And how do you hold on to that? How do you keep that? Just the last sentence, I'm sorry, it's late. When a person sees the truth that he was living until now, his whole life was living built upon a dungeon of things that were not real, that were shitcha v'sech mirma, that were not true, that were delusions, all kinds of midas and things that were not right. When you see the truth, you're already out of the light. And at that point you could already begin to envision being a greater person. You might not be there yet, that's okay. And you could take your time, we have time. But you could already envision being a greater person. You're out of the cellar. There's a bigger world and you hear and you see what it's about. And you could want it, you could envision it. And you know that what you were living in until now was a miserable cellar. And now you could find a new path in life, a new way, a greater way in life. Now it'll be a narrow shvil because it's new and it's hard. But it'll be true. It'll be real. Miruchak mehamirma. Far from the deception, far from the lie. Why can't we feel the excitement of Yiddishkeit that the Baal HaTshuva feel? Why shouldn't we feel that way? Why shouldn't we? Because we take it for granted. Because they feel the excitement of leaving the lie and coming to the truth. Why don't we feel that way? Why can't we feel that way? We can. We can feel that way mamash all the time. But as long as you're living in the dungeon, in the cellar of what you grew up with your little Dalet Amos, as I was talking a little bit on Shabbos also, so then everything is just mediocre, and everything is just this, the way that it was. There's nothing great this way or that way. And this itself will be our schar, will be our reward, to feel the great simcha, the great joy of finding a new and honest path in life. And that's our Shema continue next week.